sporty greetings and happy Friday to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Let's kick off with African football. The continent's premier tournament, the Africa Cup of Nations, will feature a new mid-year date and a bigger field of teams when it's staged in Cameroon in 2019. Reporter Samson Omale has that story, as well as more African sports news. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. We begin in Morocco, where the Confederation of African Football Executive Committee has approved that the African Cup of Nations will be expanded to be contested for by 24 teams, up from 16 from the 2019 edition of the tournament in Cameroon. CAF has also opted to switch the continental showpiece from January to February to June-July, although the tournament will still take place every 2 years rather than moving it to a four-year schedule. The decisions was reached following the two-day CAF symposium in Rabat, Morocco, where the June-July date will put an end to a long-standing feud between CAF and European clubs, unhappy with losing many of the African players for a month at the crucial part of the season every other year. And following several reports and insinuations that Cameroon may not be ready to host the 2019 AFCON, the country's sports minister has said that the 2019 African Cup of Nations will go ahead in the country despite concerns over the pace of preparations. Recent reports suggest that stadium construction is behind schedule, while Cameroon also faces economic problems. Ishmael Bindong said, despite security concerns, social and economic crisis, the Cameroonian government is totally committed to do everything possible for the Nation Cup to go ahead. And now to Ghana, where one of Ghana's biggest football clubs, Asante Kotoko's coach, Steve Pollock, has left the Komfa Anokye Teaching Hospital, where he has been on admission for 1 week. The Englishman suffered injuries from last Wednesday night's fatal accident involving the team bus with 18 players and technical team members who were returning to Kumasi from Accra, where they played Inter Allies in Ghana Premier League match. Unfortunately, the club deputy equipment officer, Thomas Obi Asare, lost his life. In athletics news, Uganda will not have the complement of his star athletes Stephen Kiprotich and Moses Kipsiro ahead of the 2017 IWAF World Championship in London next month. Both athletes opted out of the championship even after they achieved the qualifying mark for the marathon. Kiprotich, a gold medalist at the 2012 London Olympics and the 2013 World Championships, and Kipsiro, a four-time Commonwealth Games gold medalist, were expected to boost the chances of Uganda winning medals in London. The development is another blow for Team Uganda, who this week also lost female marathoner Andrew Yekasi due to an ankle injury. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
The Voice of America.
Music Time in Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. From the classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment. I offer you what you need. Free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me. I'm Heather Maxwell for Music Time in Africa every Saturday and Sunday at 0900 2000 and 2100 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. We look forward to your next Music Time in Africa show. Now let's go to Kampala, where the Cranes of Uganda will host the Bright Stars of South Sudan Saturday in a qualifying match for next year's African Nations Championship football tournament, which will be hosted by Kenya. Our VOA football fans will remember the African Nations Championship is not to be confused with the Africa Cup of Nations. While they sound similar, they're two different competitions. In the African Nations Championship, national teams must be composed of players playing in their domestic league. For example, a Ugandan player is eligible to play for the Ugandan national team only if he's playing for a Ugandan club. Uganda and South Sudan battled to a scoreless draw last week in Juba in the first leg of their African Nations Championship qualifying series. Ahead of the decisive second leg on Saturday, reporter Magumi Davis Rakaweng talked with players and coaches for both teams.
South Sudan's national team players held their final training session ahead of tomorrow's game at Lugogo Stadium in Kampala. Both players and officials say they are ready for the challenge. Striker James Moga, who is also team captain, says they have worked hard to face Uganda Cranes.
We're feeling better. We are good. We know our mistake for the last game. I think the coach start work on it. We're going to try to do our best. Let's see what will happen because it's just football, you know. But for me, I want to win.
Bright Stars coach Bilal Felix says it will be an important match because of the 0-0 score in last week's game.
Yeah, at least we need to come with something. Because, you know, Uganda is not a simple team in East African zone. So we need a lot of work so that we can come with a good result.
Whatever the outcome of tomorrow's game, Felix says it is a learning experience for his players. The tournament features only national team players playing their domestic leagues. Qualification ties are played on a home and away two-legged basis. If the aggregate score is tied after the second leg, the away goal rule would be applied. In a draw, with each team having scored, South Sudan would qualify on away goal rule. Uganda's coach, Milutin Mserujovic Micho, says he expects a tough match.
We need to give them respect, but not over respect. Let us say, when you look in division in Africa, the Nilotic way of players, cousins to those in West Africa, never say die, never give up. In any way, they are not walkover.
Ugandan player Tom Matsiko says one he knows about South Sudanese players is their athletic.
As a player, you have to take each game that comes into your way. There is no underrating any club, any team, any country. So it's South Sudan that is in our way. We have to first remove them and challenge them, and then we call them as a weak team.
South Sudan defeated Djibouti to qualify in this round. The win of tomorrow's Uganda vs. South Sudan match will play either Rwanda or Tanzania, who square off against each other tomorrow as well. The finals will be played in Kenya next year in February. For VOA, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakalinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
In more African athletics news, South Africa's World and Olympic 400-meter champion Wade Van Niekerk says he hopes to be the first person to run the one-lap race in under 43 seconds.
I can definitely think of a 42, but I mean, if you think of it, I mean, at the age of 24 last year, running a 43.03, which is so close to running a sub, it's definitely something that we need to aim for. I mean, there's no use me still doing track and field if I'm not going to aim for bettering what I'm doing, and I don't want to beat it by one split. I want to actually do a valid attempt at improving it, so I'd like to believe that I'd eventually get there. I mean, it's bound to happen. I just need to add the right race and have the right conditions and the right perfect moment, and I'm sure it will happen.
Wade Van Niekerk spoke in Monaco, where he's competing in Friday night's IAAF Diamond League meet. As Wade said, he ran 43.03 seconds, a new world record, in winning the gold medal at last year's Rio Olympics in Brazil. The Monaco meet should be a good tune-up for Van Niekerk and the other athletes ahead of the World Championships, which begin August 4th in London. In pro boxing, Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor recently wrapped up a four-city international promotional tour ahead of their August 26th mega bout in Las Vegas, Nevada. Our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Mueta, says Mayweather-McGregor is getting so much attention, it's hurting the marketing of the Canelo Alvarez-Gennady Golovkin World Middleweight Championship fight, which takes place September 16th in Las Vegas.
Nobody's even talking about Triple G Canelo. You remember before this Conor McGregor-Mayweather fight was announced, everybody was hyped about Triple G and Canelo. We've been talking about this fight for more than 2 years. And suddenly, McGregor and Mayweather, bang, nobody's talking about Triple G. You can't even see anything in the media about this big fight we know coming up in September. Not only that, Mayweather and Conor McGregor will be August 26th. The fight media will be talking about what happened August 26th for at least another 2 weeks, which cuts into the promotions for Canelo Triple G. Not only that, Canelo is Mexican. He doesn't speak English. The reason why we get all this hype from Mayweather and Conor McGregor is because these two guys, they can talk, they can hype. Triple G and Canelo, these are quiet guys. They believe in let's do it in the ring. Our fists will do the talking. We don't need to hype. We don't need to insult anybody.
Getting back to the promotional tour, a lot of props were used. You know, Mayweather throwing dollar bills at McGregor A lot of fun stuff.
Compare that to the Triple G Canelo press conference before the Conor McGregor and Mayweather press conference. Just like two guys respecting each other sitting there. So we will see you in the fight. Oh, come see the fight. Compare that with Mayweather throwing bills of money. And just I said before the fight, I said, hey, this will make you run out of your house and go get the tickets. And guess what? $100, Sonny, for you to see this on pay-per-view.
Do you have the sense, Namdi, that this is going to set all kinds of records once August 26th rolls around?
Oh, Sonny, they've already set the stage. The record is 4.2 with Mayweather Manny Pacquiao. This will go close to 5.0, 5.1. Now, we're looking at a fight that will break records all over the place. Because, mind you, Sonny, MMA is big and Conor McGregor is big. And this is not just the USA. This is going to be worldwide, you know. And so the revenue streams, I mean, check this. For the sponsors alone, the minimum bid for you to put your name on anywhere is $10 million, Sonny.
Mm.
If you want to get a piece of the ring mat in the middle of the ring, that's $25 million right there. And who are the guys fighting for it? Your Nike, your all those people fighting for that spot. So we are seeing things we've never seen before. The mainstream media is eating this up. You not only hear about this fight in the sports section, the main news comes with it. Mayweather and McGregor is a big fight. So it's bringing in people that we've never seen before. It's breaking records. So fight time, it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen.
Do you have an update on African fighters?
Your Sunny Side of the Sport prospect of the year, Isaac Dobo. He's from Accra, Ghana. 16-0 with 10 knockouts. He is in a big fight on Saturday night for the WBO International Super Bantamweight title. This is the biggest fight in Ghana in years. He's taking on Javier Nicolas Chacon from Argentina. They even brought in a referee from America, Tony Weeks. So everything will be on the up and up. The winner will get this win. Dogbo is ranked number 4 in the world, and this fight will happen at Bukom Boxing Arena. A win for Dogbo on Saturday will put him in line for a world title fight 2018.
Namdi, a former world champion from Ghana, DK Poison, receives almost $5,000 from the World Boxing Council for rehabilitation.
VOA!
Tell our VOA boxing fans about that.
Sonny, most people don't know about this grant from World Boxing Council. It's a grant aimed at helping rehabilitate former WBC champions. And he said, who were the people that have gotten this money in the past? Leon Spinks, Meldrick Taylor, Livingston Bramble, Michael McCollum, and Australian Jeff Hardin. Mind you, in the 80s and the 90s, these guys were making thousands and thousands of dollars. How did DK Poison and Ebo Dankwa get this money? Well, the Ghana Boxing Authority put in an application in 2014. We're now in 2017. They applied for $10,000 each of this fighter. But DK Poison got $4,800. Ebo Dankwa got $3,600. In Africa, in Ghana, $4,800, if it's well used, if it's done well, it will go a long way in helping these cats. And I believe it's very, very important for the boxing commissions, not in only in Ghana, but especially in Nigeria, to pay close attention to what's there. The money's on the table. Apply for this money. Somebody like Obisi Anwapa in Nigeria should be part of this grant. I mean, Leon Spinks and all these guys, they made thousands and millions of dollars and they're getting the grant from WBC. And we have African boxers struggling in Africa and their own boxing commission cannot get off the table and put in this grant for them, because the boxing commission must put in the grant for these fighters to qualify for this grant. The money is there. The boxing commission just got to wake up and put in their names.
Thanks, Namdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moeta.
Galala! Great show, bro.
Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Happy Friday, Andrew.
Very happy Friday to you as well, Sonny. Good to be here as always.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending on this Friday?
Well, a follow-up to a story that we talked about yesterday, the parole hearing for O.J. Simpson and that parole board there in the U.S. state of Nevada deciding to release O.J. Simpson from prison this October. So lots of social media activity about that, including the phrase, the juice is loose.
The juice is almost loose.
Almost loose. People, I think, a bit too eager on social media to use that phrase. Not out of prison yet, but he will be in a few short months. But that is one of many things trending on social media. Fans, though, not just talking about O.J., talking about one of the parole officers, and for a sporty reason. Because one of the parole officers there was wearing a tie featuring the logo of the Kansas City Chiefs of the National Football League. Now, a little bizarre, because OJ, while he played football, never played for Kansas City, and Kansas City is not near Nevada. So people a little confused as to why this gentleman, whose name is Adam Endel, why he was wearing that tie. Well, his paper in Kansas City, his hometown newspaper, tracked him down. He said he did it for any, just a simple reason, same reason probably any of us would wear anything. Knew he was going to be on TV. He's a fan of the Chiefs, and he wanted to wear it to show off his hometown team on TV. But he did say in the article he did not expect it to be such a big deal, because a lot of people talking about that as well on social media, wondering, why is he wearing this tie? What's up with that?
I think if he had a Buffalo Bills tie on, that would have been perfect.
That would have made a little more sense, because O.J. played for the Buffalo Bills for a good while. Or a 49ers tie, he played for them briefly. Or University of Southern California. All teams that O.J. Simpson is linked to. Not the Kansas City Chiefs, however, but that's the explanation. He just wanted to wear it to show off to all his friends.
What else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, let's hop across the pond to the Open Championships going on right now. And a lot of sartorial stories making headlines over there. Starting with Justin Thomas going old school on the first day of the Open Championships, wearing a cardigan and tie on Thursday. Of course, that used to be what golfers would wear traditionally. They would dress up and have a tie on and a hat, and they'd have the socks up to their knees and the pants rolled up, a very traditional-looking golf outfit. Well, he went old school, said that it's a woven knit skinny tie with a cardigan. He said it won't be fully buttoned up, so no problem swinging. And he tweeted out that he can't wait to rock it. And rock it he did yesterday, and the fans loved it. They said it was a retro look, a classic, bringing back that element of the game. They said it was so cool, but however, it didn't really help his game. He was tied for 16th place after the first round, so not sure if it helped or hurt him there. But another player getting a lot of attention for his fashion choices at the Open, Jason Day, sporting some high-top Air Jordan sneakers and cropped pants. Of course, you got to wear the cropped pants with the high tops so you can show off the high tops, right? Unlike Justin Thomas's clothing, however, Day's sneakers were not as highly praised. There were some that said he was awesome for wearing it, that he's a hero for sporting high tops on the golf course, but a lot of other people on social media saying that he looked just plain ridiculous wearing those cropped pants and those high-top shoes. And if we talked about Justin Thomas's fashion choices maybe not helping him on the golf course, Jason Day's really didn't help him, it looks like. He was tied for 70th place after round one, so maybe the high tops didn't pay off for him there.
I'm guessing Michael Jordan probably appreciated it.
I'm sure he did, yeah. I'm sure, and a lot of Jordan fans, maybe it's a little crossover thing, bring some basketball fans into golf, who knows.
But and I think Jordan is a very avid golfer, too.
He is. He's been seen quite a lot on the golf course, so I'm sure he very much appreciated that.
What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, if our final sartorial story from the Open Championships, a little bit of a scary situation for Swedish golfer Henrik Stenson. The 2016 Open champion, the defending Open champion, had his rental home burglarized while he was playing. Thieves took some of his valuable possessions. But here's the clothing angle. They took all of the clothes he was set to wear this week at the Open. So a little bizarre. They took all of his outfits that he was supposed to sport on the court there. Course there. A lot of people noting, though, Stenson had to strip down to his underwear to hit a shot out of a muddy water hazard back in 2009 at the World Golf Championships. And so those photos have been circulating around saying, no problem, he's got this. He can just, you know, strip down and he'll be totally fine. He can still play. But thankfully for Stenson, his sponsor was able to get him replacement clothes and rush them over, so he did not have to play golf in his underwear, which is nice for him. But scary situation still being investigated there. Hopefully they will resolve that situation. And thankfully, no one was home at the time of that burglary.
Andrew, across the English Channel, another big sporting event taking place is that cycling showpiece trending.
It is, absolutely. And finishing up stage 19, Edvard Boasen Hagen of Norway winning stage 19. So congratulations to him. And congratulations to Chris Froome, still ahead by 23 seconds, but a couple riders hot on his tail. You have Frenchman Romain Bardet and Colombian Rigoberto Urán within about 29, 30 seconds of him. So it's still fairly tight at the top with all those three riders within 30 seconds, but Froome still very much in the lead. But not just the results that are capturing social media attention. A viral video of a gendarme, which is the military police there in France, on a motorcycle. These are the guys that kind of ride alongside the riders and make sure the crowds are at bay and whatever. Well, this one motorcycle police officer had a fan running alongside him, and he has a perfectly timed shove, pushes the fan off the road into a ditch, keeping him from getting too close to the riders. Everybody loved this video. They're sharing it around social media. They said, wow, he earned his money that day, and that's an exciting moment on the Tour de France to see somebody take a tumble like that. You never want to see a rider take a tumble, but a fan every once in a while getting pushed out of the way, that can be okay.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Sonny, and have a good weekend.
You too, Andrew. And that wraps up the July 21st edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Peter Hundley. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In early July, President Donald Trump announced an additional nearly $639 million of humanitarian aid for the estimated 20 million people affected by food insecurity and violence in Somalia, South Sudan, and Yemen. Tens of millions of people are in need of humanitarian assistance as a result of the man-made crises in South Sudan, Nigeria, and Yemen, all of which are driven by violent conflicts. And in Somalia, where ongoing conflict is exacerbating the effects of severe and prolonged drought, said Acting Assistant Administrator for the USAID's Bureau for Democracy, Conflict, and Humanitarian Assistance, Robert Jenkins. Despite the influx of aid that has helped to alleviate famine in some areas of South Sudan, and has so far prevented famine in Yemen and Somalia, the overall food security situation is worsening, and life-threatening hunger continues to spread in both scope and in scale. In all four countries, conflict has been the primary driver of humanitarian need. In Somalia, conflict has made it difficult to reach some communities in dire need of food. In South Sudan and Yemen, civil wars have destabilized the economies, crippled agricultural production and trade, and sent the price of food skyrocketing. In Somalia and Nigeria, the regions that have been beset by violent terrorist groups, Al-Shabaab and Boko Haram and ISIS West Africa, respectively, are among those in the greatest need of humanitarian assistance. Through this additional funding, the United States can provide emergency food and nutrition assistance, life-saving medical care, improved sanitation, safe drinking water, emergency shelter, hygiene and health programs to treat and prevent disease outbreaks, and protection for civilians who've been affected by conflict, including both those displaced internally and as refugees. This additional funding brings the total U.S. contribution to over $1.8 billion in humanitarian assistance for the four famine crises since the beginning of fiscal year 2017, said Mr. Jenkins. We will continue to work with our international and local partners to provide this life-saving aid needed to avert famine and to support communities impacted by these crises.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Coming up this Sunday, family picnic time. You heard me. I'm bringing you 55 minutes of pure, commercial-free, pan-African music that's all made by musical families. Global, we rep for Ghana, we don't slow. Fathers and sons, brothers, sisters, identical twins, husbands and wives. It's one big musical family gathering. So tune in and feast your ears this Sunday and the following Saturday at 15 and 2000 UTC. It's Music Time in Africa. Cheers!
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss Rwanda's August 4th presidential election. Incumbent Paul Kagame is widely expected to win another term.
The amended constitution allows him to remain in power until 2034, if he pursues it. A preview of Rwanda's presidential election.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.